Good evening and happy Thanksgiving. Welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, November 27th. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Redway Community Services District encourages families to properly dispose of fats, oils, and grease this Thanksgiving. The Eureka Center for Spiritual Living announces 5th annual free holiday decoration and toy giveaway. And Caltrans sends out a PSA about traffic in Humboldt for November 28th to December 4th. Stay tuned, these stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.
Redway Community Services District is encouraging families to have a fog-free Thanksgiving this year. Fog meaning fats, oils, and grease. Nat Cardos reports.
This Thanksgiving, Redway Community Service District encourages folks to have a fog-free Thanksgiving this year. Fog meaning fats, oils, and grease. Foods cooked during this holiday, like turkey, gravy, stuffing, and more, can produce excess fats that could clog up sewer collection lines if not disposed properly. KMUD News spoke to Glenn Graydon, office manager at Redway Community Services District, for more about what happens when these aren't disposed of properly.
They start to collect, and when they collect, so you'll get some, there's some debris in the collection, sewer collection line, and then the oil will start to cool, and it'll start to collect on top of these things, and then it'll start building up, and then it'll clog the line, and then it can come right back up, and then back up into the homes and stuff, and it can create quite a mess.
It may be tempting to wash grease and oils with some dish soap and allow it to go down the drain, but when these fats cool off, they coagulate again and can cause problems to pipes. Graydon elaborates more on how this can be avoided.
It's the time where it's most likely will happen because we're all cooking the same kind of meals, so there'll be an excessive amount of grease being produced this week. You know, so sometimes you go, oh, it's all liquidy. I got it with some soapy water and stuff, and I'll just pour it down the sink. Well, that's good for the first 150 feet. Then it's going to start, the oils and the soaps and stuff will start to separate. Then the oils will start to collect and build up and create a mess. Best things to do, if you have a small amount of grease, lay some paper towels in there, kind of collect it up and move it into your garbage can. That's what I do. If you have an opportunity to, just let it sit on top of a shelf somewhere, and tomorrow morning, the next morning, it would have solidified, and you go ahead and remove that. And then you can go ahead and remove the remaining of the water back into the drain.
These are simple, safe practices that can be used year-round. Another way they can be disposed of is if you leave it to cool and simply scrape it into the trash afterwards.
It's just a good practice to have year-round. This is a good time for us to get a word out to a group of people, and hopefully it can carry on when someone's going, oh, I'm cooking some bacon. Here's some bacon. Throw in a couple of paper towels. It soaks it up. Toss it into the garbage can. All said and good. You didn't have to wait 24 hours or anything. You do that in 4 minutes, you know? I mean, those are things to do. We just got to be aware of fog, fats, oils, and grease, and what it can do into our collection systems, especially in our, even at homes and septic tanks. It causes problems there also.
For more information about Redway Community Services District and what they do, the website is redwaycsd.org. This is Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD News.
On December 6, 2025, the Eureka Center for Spiritual Living will be hosting their 5th annual free holiday decoration and toy giveaway. This event is open to everyone. KMUD talked with Scott Q. Marcus, the coordinator for this event. He shared the history of this event and why it is important to the community.
What we do is, it's our 5th year, but it's technically our 7th, but COVID knocked us out for a little bit. And we gather decorations of all kinds. Most tend to be Christmas, because that's what most people give. And we gather all these decorations, and this year we've added in toys. We put them all at our center, which is at 239 Boone in Eureka. And then we get them all organized. And then on Saturday morning, December 6th, from 11 until 2 in the afternoon, we open the doors and invite anybody to come in and take what they want.
Since this event began, it's been getting bigger and bigger every year. Usually the leftover gifts and ornaments are sent to different nonprofits in the area. But this year, Marcus believes there will be nothing left after the event.
It's been getting larger, getting more attended and larger every year. So my prediction is when the doors open at 11, there will be a line, as there has been in the past, through our parking lot and then down Boone. And then people will come in. We let them in at about 20 at a time, simply because otherwise it would not be safe to have that many people in the room. And they come in at 20 at a time. And I think by the time the event ends at 2 o'clock, there will be nothing left. We have a couple of nonprofits who have stepped forward so far and have said they'll take a few boxes, but we're always looking for more, especially if one can come pick it up. The reality is over the last at least 2 years, so many people have come and taken everything that we have had very little to give to the nonprofits. But in the event that there's stuff left over, we would love to donate it to another nonprofit who could either sell it for their own needs or they too could continue to give away whatever they wanted to do with it.
For anyone who wants to donate, Marcus explained the day and times people can bring donations for this event.
We want clean or new, preferably both, ornaments, decorations. People have donated holiday plates. They've donated holiday sweaters, wall hangings, anything that's holiday-oriented, and all they have to do is bring it by. We have hours that we'll collect, that we will be there. We will be there this Sunday from about 11 to 1, which is right after our service ends. And then there will be people there from 1 to 3 on Monday and Wednesday of next week. And then pretty much most of Friday, because the volunteers will all be in there getting everything organized, and then the event starts on Saturday.
This is a community event, and there are no requirements for people to pick up gifts and ornaments.
Anybody who wants to come in, it's just a community event. You know, there are so many people in need in general in our community, and a year like this, which has been exceptionally hard for so many people with layoffs and uncertainty in the economy and everything else that's going on, we figure the need will be probably greater than it has before. So if you feel a need, you come by. We've had, you know, over the years, some of the stories people have told us have been amazing. We've had people come in. One woman in particular comes to mind. She lost everything in the fire in Paradise. This was the first year we did it, 2019. And she wanted to decorate her house but had nothing. And she was able to decorate her entire house from what we had. We have lots of teachers who come by because they want to, like, decorate their rooms. We have people who just, you know, they can't afford to get decorations. And then we have people who come by and, you know, see some collectible porcelain thing that they wanted. And, wow, this is here too. So, yeah, it's everybody comes in.
Marcus finished off the interview by talking about the community and how events like this really bring people together.
Just a really joyful event. I know we have lots of volunteers because people just like being part of it. It's just a chance to do good with no ulterior motive, but to help your local community and to help people. And like I said, the stories that people give you, the number of hugs that we get, the smiles on people's faces, it's just a rare opportunity we get today to just do good and to do it well. It's just a wonderful event.
If there are any questions about the event, visit the Eureka Center for Spiritual Living's Facebook page or their website, eurekasom.com. Here is Caltrans District 1 explaining the highway traffic delays this week from November 28th to December 4th for Humboldt County, Lake and Mendocino County, and Del Norte.
This is a Caltrans District 1 road information bulletin for Humboldt County state highways for the week beginning Friday, November 28th. On 36, expect up to 15-minute delays near Carlotta and 10-minute delays west of Grizzly Creek Redwood State Park. Expect delays west of Maple Grove and from the Little Arby Creek Bridge to the Butte Creek Bridge. On 96, expect up to 10-minute delays north of Hoopla. On 101, construction work continues north of Herrick Avenue in Eureka. Motorists should expect minor slowdowns. In Fortuna, the southbound Main Street off-ramp and southbound Palmer Boulevard on-ramp will be closed weekdays from the 1st to the 5th. Expect delays from Dry Lagoon to Oreck. On 254, expect delays north of Wyatt and near Phillipsville. On 283, expect delays between Scotia and Riodel at the Eagle Prairie Bridge. On 299, expect up to 10-minute delays near Chesham Road and the East Fork Willow Creek Bridge. For Lake and Mendocino County, state highways for the week beginning Friday, November 28th. In Lake County on 20, expect delays from west of Upper Lake to Saratoga Springs Road. On 175, expect delays from the Diamond Dust Trail to Adams Springs Drive. And in Mendocino County on 1, expect delays at the Jack Peters Creek Bridge and Elk Creek Bridge. Expect delays in Fort Bragg from Cypress Street to Pine Street, also from Pudding Creek Road to south of Jane Lane. Expect up to 30-minute delays south of Westport at the Blues Beach Trailhead to the Overlook. On 101, expect delays near the Sonoma County line starting on the 2nd. Expect delays from the Ridgewood Summit to north of Willits. Expect up to 15-minute delays north of Laytonville and up to 10-minute delays south of Liggett. On 162, expect delays at various locations from east of US 101 to Covelo. For Delmar County, state highways on 101, expect delays south of Trees of Mystery. Expect up to 15-minute delays north of Klamath. Expect up to 10-minute delays at the Dr. Fine Bridge. On 197, expect delays near Ruby Van Deventer County Park. On 199, expect up to 10-minute delays west of Gasky. For further updates, join us on social media via Caltrans District 1.
In state news, Fresno development plan faces public opposition over sprawl versus farmland, KPFA's Vic Bedoyan reports.
Fresno's metropolitan area has experienced massive sprawl development over farmland for decades. The Southeast Development Area Plan is known as CEDA and has run into vehement opposition from many local residents. It calls for covering 9,000 acres of a rural landscape with thousands of homes and commercial development. The Fresno Planning Commission approved the plan at a recent meeting despite dozens of residents voicing their opposition. Al Cedarquist summed up the problems many people have about the development plan.
We CEDA residents want to protect our farmland, maintain our rural lifestyle, and we're facing the potential cost of over $100,000 to hook up to city water and sewer. How would you like that? The city residents here want Fresno to focus on fixing the problems within the city boundaries. Adding 9,000 acres creates more problems and stretches the budget thin.
Cedarquist said the project is not needed since the city already has room for more housing and commerce.
CEDA provides 44,000 housing units by 2050. The recently approved West Area Specific Plan supports future development of up to 55,000 housing units and 60 million square feet of non-residential building.
Cedarquist was also critical of the planning assumptions contained in the development proposal.
CEDA is risky. There's a risk that the population estimates used for CEDA are wildly wrong. The 2024 California Department of Finance population statistics indicate CEDA growth estimates are overstated by a factor of 8. Have you reviewed a risk analysis for CEDA if the state is right and the city's 2050 projection is wrong by 400,000 people?
David Ramming lives and farms in the Southeast area. He warned that the region would be changed forever.
One of the major faults of CEDA plan is that it results in a loss of over 6,000 acres of prime farmland, some of the most productive farmland in the world. This plan will take away the livelihood of many small family farmers and eliminate jobs connected with agriculture. Once the farmland is covered in housing, it will never be brought into production again.
Dee Barnes worked for the Fresno Police Department. She said that developer fees would not cover the basic city services in the developed area.
What the developer fees are not going to cover is the additional cost of the police officers, cars, and gasoline, and the driving, and the fire department, and the street lights, and the sidewalks, and the streets. Count the number of vacant lots, empty, boarded up buildings. Look at the shopping centers, that there's nothing there. The stores that are closing. We need to fix Fresno. We need to fix the infill. We cannot afford to keep expanding.
Danny Vartan was one of two people attending in favor of the project. His family owns land in the CEDA area, and he said the project would improve Fresno.
This is probably the best plan that Fresno's ever developed. I think it could be really a benefit to the whole city and a draw for people from other parts of the state to move to Fresno. And it's only 12 minutes from downtown. So I think there's more benefits by far than costs. And the fears of some people are probably overblown.
Patience Milrod is a local attorney representing the Central Labor Council. She questioned the financial transparency of the CEDA plan.
Where is the fiscal impact analysis? You are asking us to believe a whole lot of stuff that is by no means clear from any of the material that has been generated so far, including the financing options report, which shows that this is not a sustainable project. So where is the fiscal impact report that would give us some idea of what the real numbers actually are.
The CETA plan is estimated to cost somewhere in the range of $3 to $4 billion. That will have to be financed with bond measures. Matthew Gendian is a Fresno State University sociology professor. He focused on the winners and losers, saying the sprawl development would come at the expense of current city residents.
Private development doesn't just happen. It follows public investment that provides infrastructure to allow that development to be feasible. Just because land speculators purchase land in this particular southeast development area doesn't mean that our city needs to cater to them and invest millions of public dollars to extend city infrastructure and services so these developers can cash in on those land bets they made 8 years ago or 20 years ago.
Planning Commissioner David Kreiner voted against the CETA project. He shares many of the concerns that opponents have to the project.
My vote is not against growth. It's for responsible, sustainable, and equitable growth. So because of the many questions, the uncertainties, and for me, I believe that there should be a plan that represents all of Fresno, not just a certain side of town.
The CETA proposal will come before the Fresno City Council on December 4th. Opponents vow to keep fighting the plan, including the possibility of a ballot measure that would outlaw growth beyond the city limits. Vic Bedoyan reporting for the Pacifica Evening News and KFCF Radio.
In national news, shoppers worry about holiday season food prices in wake of government shutdown chaos. KPFA's Anthony Perazzo reports.
As Americans prepare for the Thanksgiving holiday, the gratitude many feel is tempered by doubts caused by the disruptions of the recent government shutdown and other economic chaos. Economists estimate the economy likely grew at a solid annual rate of about 3% in the July-September quarter, but growth is likely to slow in the final 3 months of the year, largely because of the federal government shutdown. As the shutdown stretched on, the Trump administration announced it would suspend November SNAP payments, which would have helped lower-income families afford food, despite judges' orders to use available emergency funds to continue the payments. Washington has reopened, but the future of the SNAP program remains unclear. In Berkeley, some shoppers are worried about increased prices.
They're pretty high. They're pretty incredibly high. Like, literally, I bought some apples and mandarins and spinach and, like, one other thing this morning, and it was, like, $20. So, yeah. And it was, like, four apples. It wasn't, like, 30 apples.
I think, in general, they've gone up, but I've managed to find bargains, okay, at various stores.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm able to keep my expenses as usual.
Even before the holiday season, the prices became almost doubled. I come to the same place, buy the same thing, and I've seen the prices go $50 here. The next time, it's like $50 more. So not getting a subsidy, don't get the SNAP benefit. Being a senior, I'm spending a lot of my money on housing and food. So it's really becoming a hardship.
Making things worse, turkey populations have shrunk due to outbreaks of bird flu and other diseases. Despite a 44% rise in wholesale turkey prices, many stores are offering discounted or even free turkeys to soften the potential blow to Thanksgiving meal budgets. But even if the bird is cheaper than last year, the ingredients to prepare the rest of the holiday feast may not be. Tariffs on imported steel, for example, have increased prices for canned goods. Economic data shows the economy remains in an uncertain state. Hiring has generally been weak, and the unemployment rate has reached the highest in nearly 4 years. For KPFA News, I'm Anthony Perazzo.
Veterans for Peace releases video defending calls for military service members to not obey illegal orders. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
When a group of Democratic lawmakers, all veterans, released a video telling service members not to follow illegal orders, President Donald Trump reacted angrily, calling it treason punishable by death. The Pentagon is investigating the six Democratic lawmakers, and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is considering calling back one of them, Mark Kelly, back to active duty so he can be court-martialed, which would be a highly unusual move. Now, the group Veterans for Peace is pushing back with its own video.
They are trying to influence our military to serve the president, not the Constitution, and not the American people.
America's military is strong because it's a professional, all-volunteer force, and because it's apolitical and nonpartisan.
Undermining that tears at the very fabric of our democracy.
Veterans for Peace says according to the Nuremberg Principles, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and the U.S. Constitution, service members have the right and responsibility to refuse illegal orders, such as participating in illegal wars and war crimes. Jerry Condon, a Vietnam-era veteran, is a board member of Veterans for Peace. He says the call to refuse illegal orders is not coming out of a vacuum.
The U.S. military is actively supplying Israel with weapons to continue the genocide in Palestine. The Trump administration is sending racist ICE thugs to terrorize our communities and unconstitutionally deploying National Guard and active duty personnel to U.S. cities. The U.S. military is also threatening an invasion of Venezuela in total violation of U.S. and international laws.
He says people in the military need to know what their legal options are, and his group is offering information online and by phone.
We're encouraging people to, military members and their families, to get in touch with the GI Rights Hotline. I'm going to give that number really quick, 877-447-4487. That's the GI Rights Hotline. You can also find them online.
The new veterans video condemns the attacks on the Democratic lawmakers, and it ends with a message to people in uniform.
To every service member,
continue honorably
serving.
Continue defending your country.
You and we all took an oath
not to serve a king or a tyrant,
but to defend the Constitution. Don't give up the ship.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In National Native News, Antonio Gonzalez and Gabriel Pietriazio reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Thanksgiving is a holiday that often gives Native people mixed feelings. Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire shares a few perspectives from across Indian country.
On one hand, the romanticized depiction of pilgrims and the Indians happily feasting together in 1621 sidesteps the wars, disease, displacement, and oppression that came in the centuries afterwards. Some Native people boycott Thanksgiving, and the United American Indians of New England will hold their annual Day of Mourning this year, a protest held in Plymouth, Massachusetts since 1970. On the other hand, Native people love to eat with friends and family. What is one to do? Anne Marie Dakota is the Indigenous Curriculum and Instruction Specialist for Bismarck Public Schools. A member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa, Dakota helps educators teach about Thanksgiving from a more authentic Native perspective. And her family reframes holidays like Thanksgiving and the 4th of July to be more relevant to them.
So instead of celebrating the holidays, they celebrate still being here, the survival, the ancestor histories. They acknowledge what happened to us. That's one thing that I would like to push, that we're still here, and that's why we still celebrate, to keep our language, stories, and culture alive.
And that Thanksgiving turkey might be pushed aside to make room for fry bread, Indian tacos, and Dakota's personal favorite, wild rice casserole. Someone else who's given the holiday a lot of thought is Nancy Kelsey, an Anishinaabe of the Little River Band of Ottawa Indians and a columnist for Cleveland's Plain Dealer newspaper. She thinks it's important Native people reflect on the holiday and make it their own.
Given all of the centuries of labor on our ancestors' part for us to be here as thriving people, there is no wrong way to celebrate Thanksgiving. We can make the holiday into something that is special for us.
Kelsey says allies, including teachers, can learn about the tribes native to the lands they stand on, lift up and celebrate Indigenous storytellers, and speak up when racist and ignorant things happen. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The Gila River Indian community has long relied on convenience stores to feed its 13,000 residents, who otherwise may have to drive as far as half an hour away to neighboring cities with grocery stores. But as KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, a new market, a decade in the making, has opened much closer to home.
This isn't a Bash's, it's not a Safeway or a Walmart.
Duncan Winston with Gila River Development says the tribe's new 14,000 square foot supermarket in the heart of Sacaton is much more than a store. It's a symbol of their sovereignty, since few, if any, tribes outright own their own grocers.
We don't want to leave that in the hands of a larger chain to determine who gets what. We want to be able to fight for ourselves and bring the necessary goods to our community when we need them.
From fresh produce and butchered meats to a deli serving local favorites, like the Works Burger.
One of the biggest demands from the community was you got to bring the Works back. And so we've done that.
But that doesn't come cheap because of what some refer to as resflation.
We have experienced it here. I mean, it's difficult finding reputable vendors who are willing to bring us goods and services at a fair price. Although we are rural, we are a lot closer to the metropolitan Phoenix area than a lot of the other tribes in Arizona.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Patricia Tinkler, and thanks to our reporters, Nat Cardos, Gabriel Pietrazio, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zucker.